Today, I wanted to read a poem that I discovered as a young teenager, and it's fitting since we've got so many teens here left over from camp. And I liked it so much, I had it pinned on my wall for years. It's called The Men That Don't Fit In by Robert Service. Has anyone heard of Robert Service? Well, we have a few people. Has anyone heard of that poem, The Men That Don't Fit In? Brent. We have one person. Should have known it was Brent. He always reads. He reads a lot. Well, Robert Service is of Scottish descent. He was born in Lancashire, England. And as a young man, he moved west in pursuit of adventure and exploration to Canada, which was really just a territory at the time. And he wanted to be a bit of a hobo. Now, today, that word is not exactly has a positive connotation. But the denotation at that time was someone that was more of a migrant worker that may work the railroad or odd jobs in search of adventure and exploration. So he temporarily did that, I think, before he became a writer. And he observed the gold miners all heading further west in pursuit of striking it rich, often in futility, because most of the gold miners didn't make any real money. And therein, he stumbled upon the inspiration for the poem. So, I'll just read the poem, and as I read it, think about the context. This isn't in today's society. This is, you know, late 1800s, early 1900s. Think about the pioneer days, the push to win the West. It reads, "There's a race of men that don't fit in, a race that can't stay still. So they break the hearts of kith and kin, and they roam the world at will. They range the field, and they rove the flood, and they climb the mountain's crest. Theirs is the curse of the gypsy blood, and they don't know how to rest. If they just went straight, they might go far. They are strong and brave and true, but they're always tired of the things that are, and they want the strange and new. They say, could I find my proper groove? What a deep mark I would make. So they chop and change, and each fresh move is only a fresh mistake. And each forgets as he strips and runs with a brilliant, fitful pace. It's the steady, quiet, plodding ones who win in the lifelong race. And each forgets that his youth has fled, forgets his prime is past, till he stands one day with a hope that's dead and the glare of the truth at last. He has failed, he has failed. He has missed his chance. He has just done things by half. Life's been a jolly good joke on him, and now's the time to laugh. Ha ha! He is one of the legion lost. He was never meant to win. He's a rolling stone and it's bread in the bone. He's a man who won't fit in." Now, the poem starts off fairly exciting. It doesn't end in such a fashion. I've got to say, I'm not standing, you know, in judgment of those men. I felt like I could have easily become one of them. I certainly identify with the poem. It's why it was on my wall as a young man. In my teenage years and in my early 20s, I had a lot of, you might say, extracurricular activities. I was into various outdoor sports and music and traveling. But based on the examples I saw, you know, if you go to Jackson Hole was like a mecca for adventure sports, rock climbing, mountaineering, ice climbing, skiing, snowboarding. And when I went there, started going to my teenage years, and I was just blown away at the place. It was the allure of Jackson Hole. It was just majestic, and the activities there were just full of excitement and adventure. And so I kept going back to summer camp every year, and then I would go back in the winters, and I would ski and snowboard. But as I gained skills in climbing and snowboarding, you take more and more risks, and you start moving up with better and better climbers and better skiers. But you also start noticing a theme. The guys that were there, that moved there after high school or college, would stay till they were 30 or 40 oftentimes, or 45. And, you know, they'd be working three jobs, living with five guys in an apartment. Their boots are duct taped. Their gloves are duct taped. You know, some of these guys could huck off 30-foot cliffs doing backflips. But their personal lives, you know, they weren't exactly married, you know, kids. Their personal lives weren't always exactly in order. So I decided I didn't really want that lifestyle. I thought I would just rather go to college and work and be able to take vacations. But even in my 20s, I had that fear of commitment. So I actually didn't get married till I was 32. When I met my wife, it was game on and game over. You know, I knew we dated for a week and started talking about getting married, which is ironic because I pretty much spent a decade running prior to that. So the point is that there are a lot of blessings that are associated that come with putting down the roots, getting married, picking a single job. And, you know, there's certainly a need for men like that to serve in the military, the ones that want to go west, young man, and strike it rich with gold or be pioneers. But in today's society, the civilized society, there's not a lot of lands left to explore and conquer, and there's no wars to fight. So it can be a challenge for certain types of young men to find quiet contentment with modern civilized life. But, you know, it's not just men and young men that can glean spiritual lessons from this poem, but the average church member as well. If you want a title, you can title it Finding Our Place in God's Plan, or you can just stick with the name of the poem, The Race of Men That Don't Fit In, if you want something more catchy. But today I want to reflect on Robert's poem, The Men That Don't Fit In, and draw some spiritual insights from it. His poem speaks of individuals who wander through life without committing to a path or a purpose, and they're described as restless, doomed to roam, constantly moving from one thing to the next, without ever settling down. His poem captures the plight of those who feel out of place, who never quite fit into the conventional mold. They're talented and capable, but lack the persistence to stick with one course of action. As Robert writes, he starts with a sense of adventure and the exquisite thrill of the new, but he's tired of the things that are, and he's seeking for something new. This poem explains the repercussions of trying to get ahead in life without taking into consideration the things that really matter or practicing delayed gratification. And the irony of the situation leads the reader to question their own sense of self and if they're on a path that may look right. So when you read it for yourself, you will have your own thoughts above and beyond anything I'm sharing today. As the beginning of the poem did, they'll see if they're on the path that may look right as the beginning of the poem did, but in actuality, it's very wrong, as the poem concluded. This craft of making the reader relate the subject of the poem to themselves really drives home Robert Service's purpose. It's going to, again, mean different things to different people. So is there any importance? How about the importance of the spiritual commitment in contrast to that poem? In contrast, the Bible teaches us the value of commitment and perseverance. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 10. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 10 reminds us, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. This scripture encourages us to dedicate ourselves wholeheartedly to the calling or path God has placed before us. So, and that can take many, you can pick any type of career, most types, career, different mate, different state, location, different house. But through all these choices, you need to be choosing God's path, God's way. So church, how does this apply to the church? Well, over the years, I've seen a theme on occasion of, I would say, restless, like a restless spirit. Sometimes people eager for change or a new group, a new leader, even at times new doctrines, which would fall under the category of itching ears. And sadly, I've even had acquaintances that I grew up with or went to camp with leave the faith and go back to keeping Christmas and Easter, or perhaps start keeping it for the first time. And this would be an example of a restless spirit looking for that change. Like the poem says, they're tired of the things that are and they want the strange and the new. So they chop and change, and each fresh move is only a fresh mistake. There's a warning about that in Proverbs, and it doesn't cover all change, but Proverbs 24, verse 21 reads, "My son, fear the Lord and the king. Do not associate with those given to change." Well, why not? Well, the next scripture answers that. "For their calamity will rise suddenly, and who knows the ruin those two can bring." So, not to say that all change is bad. I love change. I love, you know, getting a a new house or a new truck or, I don't know, a new meal, a new feast site. There's nothing wrong with change. Change can invite you to grow on a personal level, professional level, and spiritual level, but we don't want to necessarily embrace change just for the sake of change. There needs to be some thought to it, some plan associated with it. You know, if you desire the strange and new in your life, you can always take a vacation to a foreign country or read a book about it or pick up a new sport or a new hobby. But in regards to your core life, your fundamental life, your, you know, your school, your career, your home, your marriage, you should be cautious before you grow tired of what is and spring for what's new. I would, if I could use the stock market as an analogy, the kids would be familiar with GameStop as well. Let me interject the stock market as an example. You know, investing in the stock market works like the poem. So those that just buy and sell, those that just buy and hold the S&P 500 and their 401k, for example, hold it for 50 years, you never look at it, never even open your account until you retire. Those people outperform 99.9% of all of Wall Street's financial gurus and traders, by a long shot, especially after you consider their fee they charge. But what's popular is to buy and sell on a daily basis, day trading, swing trading, buying and selling, turning accounts, as the poem says, starting and stopping, chopping and changing. But it doesn't work for most. In reality, it's the patient, slow, and steady investors, the boring investors, who win in the long run, as the poem reads. And Jack Bogle used to say, the investors that he has with the best returns, Jack Bogle is the one that started index investing with Vanguard, that he said, the ones with the best returns never check their accounts. They never even look at it. And I know it's counterintuitive, but it's true. You can look at GameStop as an example of what happened 2 years ago. GameStop was that meme stock that went nuts with Roaring Kitty and with his Reddit column and the YouTube channel. They seized on an opportunity with, basically it was a fight against Main Street against Wall Street. Wall Street was heavily shorting the stock and Main Street was rallied under the leadership of, forget the guy's name, but his YouTube channel was Roaring Kitty. And he made like $40 million off of this meme stock. So we know people in the church here who jumped in on that stock. And it was fun to watch. It was a wild ride to watch. But most everybody lost money. It was the average person lost money because you can't jump in and jump out and try to time the market like that, starting and stopping, chopping and changing. Most people lost their shirt. My point is that often the most alluring and attractive opportunities are just dangerous traps that people fall into. And there's people that lost everything. There are people that lost hundreds of thousands. There's people that lost millions on that GameStop stock. So regarding our spiritual walk, we have to choose a path and stick with it. And typically this starts before baptism, but it's official. It becomes official upon your baptism. And unlike the men in Robert Service's poem who drift aimlessly, we are called to make deliberate choices and remain steadfast. And this applies to various aspects in our lives. For the young people here that are in school, that applies to your education. And some of you don't know what you want to major in. Or maybe you're already in college and you've changed your major two or three or four times. And that's okay. It is difficult to pick what you want to do for the next 50 years. But read Proverbs 16:3. Write Proverbs 16:3 down. Proverbs 16:3 says, "Commit to the Lord whatever you do, and he will establish your plans." So if you pray about these things, you pray about the decisions in your life that you want to take, the career, school, your mate, where you want to live. If you pray about these things, you will get some guidance. How about career again? Well, Ecclesiastes, whatever your hand finds to do, do with all your might. When you do choose a path or a career, you're going to be better off to try to stick with, let's say, a job long enough to get some benefit from it. So I've seen some people that change jobs constantly, and that's difficult to get ahead like that. If you'll stay at a job long enough to gain some valuable skills, some experience, and some connections, you'll be in a better position down the road. I got to admit, I like new things. I like change myself, but I'm fortunate enough to be in a business or industry where I don't have to change careers to do new pursuits. I get new clients every few months. I get new job sites. Everything's new. And people are always asking us to do something new. So I get to sort of satisfy that little boy inside of me that wants to go do new things, you know, without switching careers. How about marriage and family? Ephesians 5, verse 25, Paul talks about the commitment required in marriage, urging husbands to love their wives as Christ loved the church. But building a strong family requires a lot of time, dedication, and perseverance. It requires making a plan and staying on that path. My wife has 6 kids back there today, so I don't know if she's listening, but I'm pretty sure if I came home one day and told her I was ready for a new wife, she wouldn't be making me dinner that night. But I'm, you know, marriage can be a wonderful thing that really blesses your life. Church and community. Hebrews 10, verse 25 encourages us not to give up meeting together, but to encourage one another. And being part of a church community involves commitment, participation, and support for one another, staying on that path and walking in the way. So how do we bear the fruits of spiritual success? Well, when we choose a path, the path, or the way, as it's called in the New Testament, and stick with it, we will over time, maybe not immediately, but we will over time slowly begin to see the fruits of our labor. It can take months or years to start seeing fruit in your life. Instant gratification just isn't the answer. Delayed gratification is a very valuable tool to practice in your life, or valuable strategy. Galatians 6, verse 9. Galatians 6, verse 9 reminds us, let us not become weary in doing good for the proper time, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. That's a guarantee that if you start putting down the roots and you start walking in the way, you make the right decisions and you stick to your path, you will start to bear fruit in your life. Success in God's eyes is measured by our faithfulness and dedication, not by constantly seeking new and fleeting vain pursuits, which come in many forms. And by many forms, I don't just mean jobs or hobbies. It could even be doctrines, new doctrines, you know, which would fall under the itching ears category, or new cultural changes in church, or just change for the sake of change. So in conclusion, while Robert's poem paints a picture of those who struggle to find their place in life, there are also many of them seeking instant gratification for the next thrill without playing the long game. And there's a season in your life to seek the thrills. And that season is like as a teenager, maybe in your 20s, if you want to postpone getting married till you're, let's say, 30, to work on, you know, go to ABC, go to college, go to ABC, get a job, focus on your career, building a nest egg, those types of things so that you can become the person, work on yourself to become the person the best person you can be to offer something to a future mate. You have to, it takes a lot of work. Everybody's looking for the perfect mate. Well, it's more work to work on being the perfect mate than it is to find the perfect mate. So, again, practicing delayed gratification while you're on this path is a powerful strategy. Spiritually, we're reminded that true fulfillment comes from commitment and perseverance to God's way, not from the short-term gain. Also by being content, which is difficult in this world and this society, especially with social media, finding quiet contentment with the things that are and the things you have, instead of always reaching and striving for something new, something different, or something more. The better car, the better house, the brand new clothes, whatever it is. So by choosing our path wisely and dedicating ourselves to God's way, we can find meaning, purpose, and spiritual success in our lives, because that's what we're looking for ultimately. Career success is temporary. Spiritual success is forever. So let us pray for the strength to commit fully to our calling and to bear the fruits of spiritual success through our unwavering dedication to following the path Christ has laid out before us.